Hey friends, welcome to episode number 14. Incredibly, we've made it to the other side of 2020. Not so incredibly, the things that still haunted us from last year have a tendency to stick around a little longer, just to make sure we get the point. That was certainly the case with my episode with the coronavirus, and I'll share that with you today on The Art of Letting Go. So let's do it. So first, I am glad to be back. I have missed my time away. It's been several weeks since we've had the opportunity to kind of just sit here for the next few minutes and discuss the art of letting go. Quite honestly, I've probably not let go of the situations that haunted us mid-December. But I do want to put out here on the front side of the podcast, I'm not going to likely be condemning or bashing one side of the argument versus the other. I think if you're here for that, you're not going to hear it. I do respect individual thoughts and processes because I have my own. And for me, I can say I kind of grew into the knowledge of the coronavirus, thankfully not too late in the game, where I didn't take the proper precautions. But having a compromised immune system does unfortunately put me at greater risk. So frankly, I was surprised that it took so long to catch the doggone thing, but I wasn't at all prepared for how it ravaged through my body, through my home, how it also attacked my wife and other people in our family. And even within our own family, we have discussions about what's right, what's wrong, what's appropriate, just like you do in yours. So as we begin, make note to yourself that this is not going to be some great epiphany about how we react to the coronavirus, but I do want to give you an insider's view, having been close enough to the end, if you will, that I think it's worthy of discussion. And maybe by the end, I can start to let this whole thing go. I feel like a little bit of an old storyteller, like an old grandpa sitting in a rocking chair. I'm not a grandfather yet, by the way. That would be something I wouldn't be prepared for. However, on the dawn of my 50th birthday, there are moments when I find myself more of a storyteller than just about anything else. Hopefully, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm repeating myself, although I know I do. I know I do. That was an inside joke. But when December 14th came, that was the day I tested positive for coronavirus, I was already three days at least into just feeling like utter garbage. As you know already, the coronavirus attacks everybody differently. Well, let me say that I hope you know that. I hope you know that. I remember reading on social media that it's impossible for certain people to have had the coronavirus because it only lasted a couple of days for them. Well, that's the outward symptoms. And then I've had other people doubt that people that have had it for over 2 weeks also must not have coronavirus. That's also wrong. Mine lasted a full 4 weeks as far as symptom after symptom after symptom. So I'll walk you down some of that. And in the process, it's my hope that we're not just having a clinical discussion about the Rona 2020. So December 14th was the day I tested positive, but really, and that was a Monday, but that Friday previous, so December 11th, if my math is correct, that night I just kind of had the sniffles. We had plans. Obviously, it was the Christmas season, and I still attended, but masked up properly. And then the next day was our annual take the niece and nephews out shopping for their Christmas presents. So I felt as though, and I said to my wife that I wasn't feeling the best, but I felt as though we could still accomplish doing that. Because the aching in the joints, quite honestly, regardless of my advanced years, also was something that I kind of dealt with on a daily basis. Some of that is just the result of long-term disease with PSC and irritable bowel syndrome, so on and so forth. So waking up with achy joints is kind of the norm, right? It doesn't do anything to affect my ability to work. It's kind of like starting a cold engine. You know, it's as you're getting out of bed, you got to get the legs moving and get out. But that Saturday morning, the 12th, it took a little bit longer, and it was a little bit achier. And again, just in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I probably have a good old-fashioned cold, because I carry my colds in my mid-back, like between the shoulder blades. And it's funny, as I talk to people, everybody carries their cold somewhere differently, lower back, in the head, so on. Mine always attacks right in the spine, between the shoulder blades. So that's what I was feeling, but maybe a little bit more intensity. And of course, the knees weren't working the best. So we went about that day. It was fun. It was very fun. It's always fun when you're shopping with 5 and 6 year olds, just seeing how the holidays still light up their life, and, you know, getting a new toy or two or 12. I don't remember how many we bought. It can just change their whole perspective on giving. And it was fun. We had a good time. But by that night, by the time we got home and dropped off the kids, I was really struggle bussing, not going to lie. So I remember going to bed, and we had another Christmas event or birthday event or something the next day. And I just said to my wife that I doubt that I could go, that if I wanted to be effective for the last week of school, I better lay low. Plus, I'm sure the Colts were playing, and, you know, that's important stuff. So that Sunday, then, I must admit that I just felt miserable, just miserable, head to toe, miserable. I thought, my God, I've got a cold and the flu. Well, that's a funny trick. And again, maybe if you've had the coronavirus, you know, you're not naturally thinking that you have the coronavirus, unless you've lost your taste and your smell first. I didn't, so I just thought, oh, wonderful. Here comes the first cold of the season. Well, on Monday, the 14th, I felt as though I was in a full-blown cold symptom, or maybe not flu-ish, because I'm smart enough to know don't go to work if you feel flu-ish. But I did have what I thought was a cold. Heavy on the sniffles, a headache, pressure in the eyes, and again, the continued achiness in the joints. Let me tell you, in hindsight, that's the kicker right there. It's the achy joints. My. We'll get back to that later. And so I went to work. And I came to work early because I had it in the back of my mind that whether it was cold, whether it could have potentially been the flu, or even the coronavirus, I wanted to get some lessons taken care of in advance on the off chance that I was going to have to be out for a couple of days. So I came to work early, and it's thankfully in my particular school, I'm rather isolated, as we all are, away from anybody else. So I just sat at my desk, but my boss came in some little time before work and didn't even say hi. I thought that was rude, just rude. But she said, "You look like garbage. Why don't you leave and go get tested for the coronavirus?" And I said, "Hello to you too. I'm just messing around." She said hi first, but then she said, "I look like garbage." And let me tell you, I am the most stylish guy. For me to look like garbage, you got to know I must have not felt well either. So I left. I did go out to one of the local clinics, and she tested me. came back very quickly and said, oh, you're very positive. You're positive. And gave me a plan of attack, unfortunately, that I could not participate in. Some of it had to do with insurance. Some of it had to do with semantics. Some of it had to do with who the primary health provider is, all of which I'm going to call BS in a time of a pandemic. How about we all just learn to take care of each other and not worry about profitability? It sickens my stomach that I was not able to participate in the protocols that were in place to take care of early onset coronavirus. But, you know, as long as everybody makes the almighty buck, it's good. I mean, don't get me started. Seriously. Too many people are being affected by this virus, whether it's for a couple of days or whether it's long term or whether it's I'm on a ventilator now as a result of it, for us to be worrying about medical billing. God bless you all that work in that industry. I'm sure this is a tough, tough time. But you, as much as any of the rest of us, want only for this virus to go away and not to be worrying how much it costs. Okay, soapbox removed. So I went home and I called my wife because, as all protocols are, especially in education, is if you've been exposed, you gotta go. I'm sure there's some catchy phrase we could create there. So I called her immediately, and I'll tell you what, this was maybe 9:15 in the morning. They're very efficient at the testing sites, very efficient. So I left school at 8:30, and by 9:15, I was calling my wife, telling her I had tested positive and that she had to come home. Now, you would think that would mean, hey, we got the last week of school off. Yay, yay, yay. No, it really doubles down. At least her workload, being a special education teacher. I was blessed to have an incredible substitute who was kind of built into our staff. I mean, it's not her job to be the substitute, but she stepped up and did it, which was fantastic for me because she knows how I operate my classroom. And maybe sometime we'll talk about classroom philosophy. I got a lot to let go there. So as that first day came, all of a sudden, all of the slow rolling from the 3 days prior became like this fast sprinting. It's like, whoa, 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 let's slow it down a little bit. But by noon that day, I could barely function. I probably couldn't string a sentence together. And my wife, who hadn't yet felt any of the effects, my wife and mother-in-law actually came over and put together an isolated room for me while I was sleeping. That's not a trick that most husbands can get away with, but they did, and I'm eternally grateful. So that became my isolation room. I did not want to isolate in my own bedroom. I'm sure people who've had chronic illnesses will understand when I say that sometimes the most comfortable place in the house where you would naturally do healing is not where you want to be the next time you're sick. You know, I spent weeks, if not months, in bed after the liver transplant and the ileostomy surgery. And the last place I wanted to be for coronavirus was back in that stinking bed. So they were gracious and put together a different bedroom for me. And that's where I stayed. And I stayed there for 3 days, full time, 4 days, probably. And by the second day, it was becoming a struggle to even cross the hall to get to the bathroom. I was dizzy. And there were really many times throughout the next couple of days where I had to wonder if maybe this was blasting through my body at a super fast rate, which would be awesome. It's great. Let's do this thing and be done with it in a couple of days. Oh, my, I was wrong. Well, my folks had, my mom in particular, had posted on her Facebook page that same Monday her frustrations with the coronavirus after the loss of a friend. So I didn't feel like that was probably a good time to let them know that I had the coronavirus. So I just kind of stayed mum, that's M-U-M, mum, for a couple of days and then contacted them because I did want to release that out to not only Facebook family and friends, but people who aren't on social media. But I really felt compelled to make sure that my parents were among the first to know. So after doing that, thankfully and very blessedly, people responded positively, even people who have posted on social media about their concerns that this might be conspiratorial or that it is a leftist or a radical right propaganda piece, that it's made up. I'm going to tell you, it's as real gets. And so I wanted to put that out there, at least to, you know, if you're a good viber or you're a prayer, we'll take it. Because we were in a bad way, frankly. Well, Maggie had not tested positively or negatively yet. She was still serving her prison term, quarantine, those first 3 or 4 days. So she went in on that Friday, a full week after I started feeling symptoms, and again, popped positive almost immediately. And other people in our family did too, and I'll leave them to tell that story, but thankfully, Maggie doesn't get too upset if I share. So she tested positively, but she was able to get this infusion therapy, which is made from antibodies, et cetera, that I was not able to get for, again, various reasons. I was tested in the lab of one hospital network who did not want to provide the infusion prescription to the other hospital network, but the originating network was not in my network, so that would have been out of pocket. And then in contacting my specialist, realized that that infusion therapy could have done serious damage to my liver, so here you go. Thankfully, Maggie followed the right protocol there and was able to get the infusion therapy. Now, generally, I'll let her tell her story should she choose. But I know that really within a couple of days, most of the outward symptoms were gone, which was great. It was great for her to be able to do that. And it was, in a way, God's perfect timing, because that's when my downhill slide actually started happening. I'll tell you more about that on the other side of this break. So now it's going into Christmas week. And for me, the coronavirus is picking up speed. It's like going downhill without brakes on ice, you know. You're about to hit a tree, and my tree's coming. But Christmas week is coming in. Maggie's tested positive, but thankfully, generally speaking, by that Monday before Christmas, her symptoms are already starting to go away. By Tuesday, she is functional. By Tuesday of that same week, I was already sleeping 18 hours a day. I was losing my taste. Smell had gone the day before. So as I was saying earlier, some people, that's their primary sign. For me, it was one symptom after another. First, it was the achiness, of course, then the stuffiness, the headaches, the nausea. And we're going each in a different day here to not feeling that hungry, to wanting to sleep, to, oh, there goes the smell, oh, there goes the taste, to now I'm sleeping 18 to 20 hours a day. And by Christmas morning, which we typically Christmas Eve and then Christmas morning, we would typically share with our boys. We had obviously canceled all of that. So Christmas Day, I laid in the basement while Maggie sat somewhat near, and we watched our traditional Christmas movies. She likes While You Were Sleeping. I think we were kind of living out that movie at that moment, and she didn't really quite realize it. But then we also watched, I think, a Hallmark movie, because of course you must, and then It's a Wonderful Life. Somehow or another, I mustered enough energy to just sit there and absorb, because It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie, Christmas or not. It's my favorite movie. And even in that moment when Corona is at this point really ravaging my system, I still mustered up a tear at the end, because obviously George Bailey, he discovers his life is worth living, and the people in the community come and help him recoup Uncle Billy's losses. So it's always a tearjerker to remember that any man with friends is never a failure. Well, it's not that I was feeling like I was a failure or that I was alone or anything like that. I just felt like I don't want to move. I don't, you know, let's keep the TV a little low, keep the Gatorade flowing, but I'm not hungry. And this continued on. Our boys came over that Saturday just to celebrate very quickly, so a couple days post Christmas. And they left with, you know, not a lot of fanfare, but we had at least a little time to share together. And that was wonderful, and it was blessed. And my boys are such good boys that they would come and do whatever was needed for dear old dad. So we're on the other side of Christmas now. And again, by this point, I've had the coronavirus at least 10 days. And so I'm really thinking that, first of all, it's going to start getting better. And secondly, that I'm on, since I'm on the backside of those 10 days, maybe I can get back to work in a timely order. See, our school functions year round, even if we don't have students. So a traditional Christmas break looks a little different for our teachers than it might for yours. So there are some staff members that are here every day, and I would be one of those people. So I was anxious to get back and do some prep work and grading, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, I actually just said I was anxious to grade. But you have to realize I did nothing else for 10 days. But this was not the case. Day 11 came, and it just seemed to be getting worse and worse and worse. We had made a trip out to yet another clinic looking for some relief. And really, I mean, I believe the doctor did what she felt was necessary on that particular day. But in other ways of saying it, there was really nothing else that they could do for me. Being a liver transplant patient, some medications, most medications that they would typically give even for temporary relief, metastasized in the liver. And we don't want that, because that can cause damage on the borrowed liver that I have. I'm trying to take good care of it. So last thing I want to do is damage it, even if it's for short-term gain. Yet I knew if I went to the hospital that my condition was getting worse enough that likely I also would have been put on a ventilator. And I know just enough about my own mechanism, my own, whether it's coping or whether it's taking care of my own health, that me going on a ventilator likely meant I wasn't going to come back off the ventilator. So I chose not to. And that was a choice that a couple days later, I felt probably bit me in the butt, but was still worth making. So New Year's Eve came. And traditionally we spend that with our friends, Rebecca and Andy and Joe and Stacy, and we ring in the new year together. We've done it for, you know, 10 years probably. But we decided again this year, even though we would have been socially distanced, we would cancel it. And I wouldn't be able to have gotten dressed anyway. So Maggie and I rang in New Year together. Now, I slept until about 11:45. and Maggie came out and joined me in the living room. And we rang in the new year together, and I'm pretty sure I was back to sleep by 12:12. I'm going to be honest with you in saying that I truly believed, and I think if Maggie did an inventory of her emotions for that night, I truly believe that was the last night that there would be a me, at least in the body form. I did not think that I would live through that night. There was really nothing left in the tank. I'm not overselling it. I'm not being dramatic when I tell you that. I'm being strictly factual. I had not eaten in over a week. Even Gatorade was starting to taste too thick for my liking. I wasn't really using the restroom because I wasn't processing much. I was sleeping 20 to 22 hours a day, maybe longer, frankly, because for me, the only reason to be awake would be to try to go to the bathroom, and I really wasn't using the bathroom, so what was the point? I tried my best to play with Lexi and Bailey, but play meant tapping them on the head and sending them forth. So I was a little bit surprised, frankly. I mean, I'm going to be so very honest. I couldn't even muster up the strength to pray. The only prayer I said that night was, take care of Maggie, take care of the boys, watch over my family. I mean, that was it. I couldn't even say, save me, help me, Lord. I simply did not have the energy. Wonderfully, I learned years ago that if the only prayer you say is thank you, it's enough. And I really have lived such a blessed life that had it been true that I not made it through the night, that would have been enough. There was many, many thanks already. But I did wake up. Whoopee. I woke up. And I thought, oh, okay. So today is going to be the day, January 1st, 2021, that we take a turn. I still was wrong. Like, how low can you go with this freaking disease? Well, I found out. But the thing that did leave me was this overarching feeling that I might die from it. So hope returned. And I want to tell you that even in that time when I felt as though I might die, I wasn't feeling, why me? I still didn't. I was still believing that all of this was for a reason and that I've lived on somebody else's dime for so long. Remember, in theory, I should have died when I was 21. And then again in 2012, and certainly in 2015, but there was another purpose. And so I never felt like if I had died from this virus that I gave up. That was not my feeling. I felt as though I have fought for so long that if this was God's will, I wasn't going to fight it. I fought against everything else. I'm not going to fight against God. And it took a few more days till about the 7th or 8th of January, frankly, before things really started to turn. And when they turned, it was quick. I mean, it's as though it's like ice melting or snow melting from a snowstorm and you're hit with a 40 or 50 degree day. That's how quickly it changed, if you can follow that analogy. It started to melt away. My smell came back. My joints stopped aching. The cold symptoms that I felt were gone. I started feeling hungry for certain things. And then I tried to stand up. I sleeping so long each day, you don't get up and just go run around the block just to keep things moving. You're like, how soon can I get back to bed, please? Thank you very much. So I stood up and this intense pain shot through my legs that for diabetics, which I happen to be as a result of medication, but diabetics suffer from neuropathy. And other people get it clearly because I did not feel as though this was caused by my diabetic state. But moreover, because I hadn't used my legs. So there is a study or two out about what they're going to call cutesily. I made that word up. I know it. But it's going to be called COVID toe. And it's really, it's this post-COVID neuropathy that, again, I thought I would be straddled with for a very long time. Well, here we are now in late January. And I can tell you that it also has gone away. In fact, I will tell you that I have not felt this good in months prior to COVID. So maybe we'll call that the COVID slide. And it takes a long time after being around people with coronavirus for your system to actually catch up and you start feeling it. That's a theory. I put it out there. There's a million theories, so I'll just add mine to the pile. But nonetheless, by the time January 14th rolled out, I had been able to rejoin my classroom just a few days prior. And it almost felt like a reunion of sorts. Because I love what I do. And the thought that I couldn't do it anymore as a result of the COVID virus, COVID-19, the Rona, whatever you want to call it. That ultimately is what made me sad. So the joy of rejoining my classroom, the joy of being able to teach people, just like we do here on this podcast, about the things that we have to learn how to let go of, those were healing moments that truly did allow me to sit back and realize I cannot keep continuing to live a life or in this moment, worrying about how the next COVID virus or the next mutation is going to affect me. I'm going to do everything I can to protect myself, and I'm not going to fight about it. That seems at this point to be a ridiculous venture for me. We all have our own beliefs, friends. And sometimes, even though we believe it so strongly, it's not the right belief. And here I'm talking to both sides. Just because we believe something is happening to us that might be a detriment caused by somebody who doesn't believe the way we do, doesn't mean that that's actually the case. Never has. It means that whatever our strongly held beliefs are, we are trying to find evidence to support. So let me again, as I close, take a slightly different approach. We can all do better and be better, especially during this coronavirus. This is our opportunity to be difference makers. In fact, it's often said that we can always choose to be right, but we can also choose to be kind. And in times like this, why don't we choose being kind? I'd love to hear your stories. You've listened to mine. Please, please reach out during this time on social media especially and let us know how you're doing, how your family's doing. I love you, my friends. And I say that with a full heart and in full healing. And I hope that you'll get the opportunity to listen again next time on The Art of Letting Go. Until then, I'm James Steensma. So we were all looking forward to 2021, right? We thought for certain that 2020 was over, and somehow or another, COVID-19 was going to stay in 2020. Well, it's a virus. I'm sure we actually knew better. We just actually thought we could wish it to go away. But here are some things we can wish for. Here are some things we can achieve, because we proved once again that we could still make it through. That we could still make it through. Many people were permanently affected by the coronavirus. There are things we don't know about it yet that might cause permanent damage or permanent side effects. I hope not. But I also hope that now that we're post-political season, now that we're post-2020, that we're on the worst side of not knowing what coronavirus is about, maybe we can also be more forgiving than is necessary. Maybe we can be kinder than we thought we could. Maybe we could love a little more, argue a little less. And I'm going to tell you, I need to hear this too. You're not the only one. Overall, I really do hope that we can all do better and be better. It's a theme I live by, and I hope you do too. Remember, if all of this has been a struggle for you and you want to just talk it out, why don't you text the crisis text line at 741-741. 741-741. And they'll prompt you through, and they'll get you the right kind of help in this moment. You matter, and you should never suffer alone. Until next time, my friends, this is The Art of Letting Go, and I'm James Steensma.